Okay, so yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to help out again this year with the cross-breed EPD adjustment factors. And I do stress what Mark said. A part of what we want to do this year is talk a little bit about where we are with germplasm evaluation and sampling, what's happened with bulls that have been sampled by the breeds in recent years, and let you guys sort of have a status report in terms of where GP is going and its role in supporting the cross-breed EPD program, in addition to the other things that we use that population for. So I won't spend quite as much time on the cross-breed EPD part of the talk this year. Just start out with a little bit of background. I think most of you are pretty aware of what's going on. Dr. Larry Kunda talked a little bit about this earlier today, sort of the history of a cross-breed EPD, started with he and Dave Nodder on a joint project in the early 90s that started into this program where using this research-tested breed differences to develop factors to adjust to cross-breed EPDs for commercial producers in the industry today. So this is just a look at basically how many progeny records we really have going into this from a variety of bulls. Obviously, as you can see right here, the data is predominantly made up of Hereford and Angus, which were sort of the linkage breeds, if you will, through all of the germplasm evaluation programs from the 1970s through the basically through the early 2000s. Every cycle of GPE had Hereford and Angus in it, hence we have a lot of sires and a lot of progeny from both of those two breeds. The next largest breeds are generally those ones that were represented in cycle 7 and in earlier cycles, your Limousine, your Gelvie, your Simmental, primarily Charolais, and then after that we kind of go down to somewhere around breeds that have been represented in one cycle and are now being used in our continuous updates, and then two breeds that are just in our new cycle, our new GPE program, not a cycle, and that would be Santa Gertrudis and Key Angus. So this gives you an idea of where we're at with our data numbers that go into these breed differences we use for the cross-breed EPDs. I'm going to go right into, without the usual background, basically what the sire breed differences are right now in 2010 based on 2008 EPD adjustments. An important thing for you guys to think about right here as I'm presenting these is that breed differences are not a constant. They do change year to year, primarily because the breeds change in terms of their genetic trend would be the main reason. Some of the changes that you see year to year in these sire breed differences are due to other factors in addition to genetic trend. Most of that would be due to our sampling new animals that are more representative of the breed at most recent parts of the breed, you might say, right now. And sometimes due to changes in the genetic evaluation system of the breeds themselves. So this is not the adjustment factor. That's an important part to realize about this. This is basically an indication of how much different you'd expect progeny means to be between two breeds if you use them on a third breed. So say if you mated an Angus and a Hereford to a third breed such as a Simmental cow, you would expect the progeny to be 4.9 pounds different if you used an average Angus and an average Hereford in 2008. Okay, not too much has changed too severely with birth weight. We do have some changes in some of our other traits that I'll highlight a little bit right here. This is the weaning weight breed differences. Some of our bigger changes are coming from breeds that had lower numbers. If you remember that first slide I showed, had lower numbers of progeny relative to some of those breeds that have been sampled more often. What I'm speaking about here right now would be, say, your Brahmin are a little bit higher than they were. Let's see, who am I missing? I think that's probably the primary weaning one that changed the most. Additionally, Brahman is not evaluating quite as many sires as they were in our old cycles of GPE, that we didn't get EPDs for them anymore. That also changed that solution a bit. Yearling weight, I guess that's actually where I saw some more changes from this year to last year. South Devon had a had an adjustment because more bulls, it's kind of a reverse of Brahman, more bulls were evaluated for EPDs than had been previously that we were using in our cycles, and they appeared for the first time in this evaluation as part of this adjustment. Tarente, for the first time in about 4 or 5 years, had had an update to their national cattle evaluation. Part of that update showed a huge genetic trend in both weaning weight and yearling weight. Their breed differences for the cattle, obviously on center, didn't change very much, but adjusting it to a current base, they gained quite a bit on yearling weight. Something similar happened with Bronvay. That actually is primarily a change in genetic evaluation a little bit, and also due to the new sampling in Bronvay, their amount of data went up by about 20%. Okay. Milk was not substantially changed for most breeds across the board. So other than a few minor tweaks due to genetic trend, milks basically were nearly the same. These are the slides. We've all seen quite a bit of these through BIF that we produce here at US Meow Research every year. Basically, through cooperation with these seven breeds, they provide us their genetic trend, and then we're able to use the crossbreed EPD adjustment factors to basically look at where they started relative to each other and where they've ended in terms of that genetic trend. And what you see there, you know, are things that I'm sure people have typically been shown in genetic trends. For birth weight, for instance, where breeds started to go up with genetic trends when EPDs first started became available due to correlated response to yearling weight without controlling for birth weight. And then you end up with a plateau where most breeds have either slightly gone down or plateaued from when they really started realizing we need to control birth weight. Okay? These breed differences have remained relatively constant other than some changes in our sampling of GPE. Weaning weight, you start to see selection for growth here quite a bit. The thing I always find interesting about weaning weight, and even more so on the next slide with yearling weight, we've got our British breed starting the same nearly in terms of weaning weight, but have a divergence as some breeds have selected a little bit harder for weaning weight over time, and we start to see some divergence then in those breed means as a result of that. Generally, continental breeds are still higher, but the British breeds, as was pointed out several times this morning, have generally caught up quite a bit on yearling weight or on weaning weight. That's even more so true with yearling weight, where you see Angus starting below, for instance, Red Angus, who you know would have broken off around that time, and before that, but around before the time genetic evaluations were available. But you see, they were kind of equal, and Red Angus selected Angus is selected pretty hard, even though all the breeds have kind of gone up in yearly weight. It's selected on a more intensive scale, and is close to Simmental and Charolais now on yearling weight. You see a similar trend again on milk in terms of focus, to where for instance Angus is higher than Simmental on milk now, and you still have Gelvie being the ones with the highest milk EPD on an adjusted basis. So these are the factors, and I don't want to dwell on these too long. The point when you take these home is that these are what you use to add to the EPD. In and of themselves, these factors don't mean a lot. And that's something I try to caution every year, is don't look at these and expect this to tell you something about the difference between what a breed. This is just something that gets added to the EPD so we can compare bulls on the same scale. Okay? These are available in the back of your proceedings. They will be available through a Beef Magazine website, through the BIF website, and through our own US Meow Research website for factors to add within the next week or two. So, or contact myself or Mark directly, and we can help hook you up. just so you, just an example of using these factors, basically if you have the EPD for these three breeds and take the table value, you end up with crossbreed EPDs that are comparable when you want to choose bulls from these three breeds to mate to some other cow. Okay. Same thing, factors for weaning weight. Again, these are not ways to make comparisons directly. If you have large changes in here, it's generally due to things like base adjustments and stuff like that. For instance, Solaire had a base adjustment to be more like Angus and as a result has a much lower factor this year. But again, these are not how you compare breeds. These are just what you add to the EPD. And the same thing primarily for yearling weight and milk. Okay. This is sort of a summary, and it helps for, I think, for producers to be able to see this on a scale. Before, I was showing sire breed differences. These are sort of sire breed differences, but adjusted to some mean level of birth weight, wean weight, and yearling weight. And it gives you an idea sort of relative rankings on the scale that most of you are used to for yearling weight, birth weight, and milk, how much different we'd expect a breed of sire effect to be when crossed to some breed that's not good crossed to the same breed. So, for instance, this gives you an idea of that 5-pound difference I mentioned earlier in birth weight if an Angus and Hereford were mated to, say, a Simmental cow. Carcass traits we've been doing now for a couple of years, and I think we're starting to get a little more confident that they're starting to settle down a little bit. Might change some with some more sampling of breeds over the next few years in GPE. But part of the premise that I haven't really talked about to save more time to talk about the germplasm evaluation is calculating a regression to adjust the differences in EPDs in breeds to our differences we see at the Meow Research Center. And for reasons due to the treatment of our animals on center, you can't expect a pound difference on center to be the same as a pound difference in the industry. These regressions are calculated to adjust to that, but they've been very strange in general for carcass traits, partly because of the lack of data. We just have, you know, we've only get carcass data on steers in traditional GPE projects. It hasn't been enough to try to estimate these regression coefficients correctly. And for now, we've been using them and fixing them at a regression of 1. So we've been assuming a difference in marbling scale for our cattle on center is the same as a difference in marbling score, EPDs, off center. And the positive thing I want to highlight about this, although I don't say that on this slide, it's kind of in your proceedings, and for everything except, I believe, marbling, these regressions actually now are starting to come closer to 1. So we're starting to feel a little more confident about where these go. We're thinking about trying some statistical techniques that really try to center it on 1 and then see if a breed is actually different than 1. But for now, we're comforted just to see that our regressions are getting closer for carcass traits, and probably helps us sleep a little better at night that we're doing the right thing. So, in order to participate in carcass, we've tried to evaluate some other types of breeds in this, but right now the only thing that's working well is to continue with the BIF resolution that we use age-adjusted endpoints to be able to compare these EPDs on a carcass basis. And this year, 13 breeds were able to supply EPDs in this form. Okay. Again, I kept this as a relic of last year and the year before that slide, which 2 years ago was the first time these were released. This is still going to be the place where changes happen the most often, not because of changes in the breed, but because of changes in our sampling. This is the most likely place because of the amount of data we have to get our U.S. mark breed differences. This is the most likely place you're going to see changes over the next few years. These are the breed of sire differences, again, for carcass traits. And for the most part, they line up, I think, how we expect them to. Angus having the best, quote-unquote, marbling, the most choice, if you will. And basically, in general, continental breeds being a little bit less marbled. There's definitely some intermediates there, both on the British and continental side. In ribeye area, generally the British breeds are smaller in ribeye area. Indicus being somewhere in between, that's only Santa Gertrudis in this case. And then you kind of step up to different continental breeds on ribeye area. Fat thickness, generally the British breeds are fatter with some exception for Shorthorn and South Devon, both being being leaner for sure. And then some of our traditional lean continental breeds like Charolais being the most lean of all. Okay. These are the factors then. Again, these are not the ways to compare the breeds, although it's a little safer. These are not the ways to compare the breeds. A crossbreed, if you want to compare EPDs crossbreeds, these are the factors that you add to the EPDs. Okay. We'll reevaluate regression coefficients in future years. Like I said, I'm a little comforted that they're a little closer to one than they were in the past. Carcass differences between breeds are in the expected direction in relative magnitude right now. Sorry about that spelling error. Okay, so this is what I wanted to get to and try to save some time to talk about to give you guys an update on where we are with our germplasm evaluation program, what its current status is, and where we expect it to go in the future. This is a historical look at the germplasm evaluation at the Meat Animal Research Center. I kind of inherited my name from a predecessor, Larry Cundiff, who really was instrumental in getting this program going. I know almost everybody in this room knows the great contributions that Larry's made to this work. And basically the premise was we want to get an idea of what sort of exotic, at the time, germplasm is entering the U.S. and see how they compare to the breeds where the breeds we're used to are Angus, Hereford, and Shorthorn to an extent. Okay? And that's what it was. You see, in the beginning, it was some of the continental breeds that have become so prominent in the U.S. now. A few breeds that we still don't see a whole lot of. But really, this was the first real scientific look at how much different, at why we call Charolais a lean growth breed, for instance, or Simmental a high milk growth breed. This is the first time those sorts of things got looked at. Okay? And as I said, the important thing to realize here is that breed differences are not constant, and calling a breed the high lean growth breed back then is not the same as calling it that today. And so it's important in order to do the crossbreed EP adjustment factor or just to get basic breed differences is to realize that we need to continue to reevaluate this process and see what's going on with our breeds as selection occurs by the breeders in the breeds today. So GPE, as we looked at this, and primarily this is a lot of thoughts of Dr. Tallman, who's leading the session here today, that all of the answers we needed were not being answered by the traditional cycle approach to GPE. We needed something that was more continuous, that allowed every progeny to have some contribution towards our genomic objectives, which you see here on the right. I won't go very deep into those today. And also contributed to getting a good estimate of breed differences, as well as things like genetic correlations and heterosis that we're all interested in, novel traits such as feed intake, fertility, cow longevity, those sorts of things. In addition to this, GPE has traditionally had these other objectives, basically breed differences, but also evaluation of exotic germplasm. And there's a line between these as to where we want to go, because trying to evaluate new germplasm takes away emphasis on trying to evaluate differences between breeds that we're used to. Okay? If I want to reserve a spot for a new breed that I want to, that we don't know much about, I have to take spots away from breeds that we're trying to find more about. We started this program trying to emphasize, let's make sure we're getting our breed differences covered very well and continue to have animals from the breeds, the primary national cattle evaluation breeds represented, and less spots in order to bring in new breeds if we see the potential for that in the future, as I'll show you as we move forward here. as I said already, secondary objectives are try to estimate heritabilities for novel new traits and to estimate genetic correlations between those novel new traits and things that we're used to, such as weights and carcass traits. Another objective is to estimate breed-specific heterosis. I think we all are aware that if you cross a Brahman sire to a British cow, we're going to get a blow-up in that calf's birth weight because of the breed-specific heterosis, if you will, between that mating. We want to be able to do a better job of estimating those breed-specific crossing effects in order to try to adjust to that. So this is an idea of the new structure that we're trying to achieve, and essentially we want to be able to continue to sample. I'm showing these 16 breeds. We want to continue to sample from the 16 breeds with the most registrations that have a national cattle evaluation, and keep updating the bulls from their prominent AI sires every few years, and mate them to different resource pools of cows. One resource pool of cows being to develop purebred cows for each of those 16 breeds on center. This has a several advantages from our perspective, one of which is to see these breed-specific heterosis crossing factors and to get a contemporary group of cows for these breeds in order to estimate breed effects on the maternal side as well as on the traditional direct AI sire side. Okay. We have begun that process. Thankfully, we had cycle 7 and cycle 8 recently, to where we had a lot of half bloods of several of these breeds that we're able to try to move toward our grade up process. What we're doing right now is trying to grade up the rest of those breeds in order to get to something that's closer to a 7/8 purebred before we say that we kind of have our purebreds available. Okay. As we move on with that, basically what we're doing is crossing these two groups of cattle as well in order to produce F1 squared, F1 crosses, as well as what we call F1 squareds. And basically all we're doing with these advanced generations is getting better estimates of nicking, you know, heterosis types of crosses in breed-specific cases, and getting more information for our genomic objectives because of the linkage disequilibrium types of things that we're, or linkage types of things that we're creating in these crosses. So basically another thing that's kind of interesting here in developing these purebred populations, as I said mostly already, we're improving the partitioning of breed effects from heterosis. We're providing greater separation of breed contrast. We're now, you know, traditionally GPE was estimating one half of the breed differences. Now we're able to estimate the full breed differences in several cases from these crosses. We're contributing to the estimation of breed-specific heterosis. We're providing flexibility to respond to changing population needs. In other words, it's easy to insert another breed into this program to evaluate exotic germplasm, for instance. But the other thing that's useful about this development is it brings us closer to looking at breed-specific effects for S&P panels, which, as you've already heard throughout this BIF conference, that's something that has become a primary talking point toward moving forward in our genomics on within-breed genetic evaluations. This is just an idea, and this is particularly for those breed association reps that are in here, of where we're getting to right now. I'm not quite at that step yet. This is sort of a hypothetically proportion of where we want to be. If we were going to try to get GPE up to about 3,000 cows calving per year, we'd expect approximately half of that to be matings out of purebred cows. And then the rest of the cows being F1 cows having progeny, such as these F1 squareds, which would have a small amount of terminal progeny. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that, but that's just an idea of how many purebred cows we might have relative to crossbred cows in our GP program overall. As I said, I don't know if you guys realize it, but if you want to grade up from a half-blood to a purebred, it doesn't take just 1 year in most cattle segments. We're in a transitional period of trying to get there right now, producing a lot of back crosses in F1s, so half bloods and three quarter bloods. The nice thing is those still do a good job of meeting our objectives both genomically and for things like across breed EPDs to estimate breed differences as we go through this grade up process. This is what I was trying to get at earlier here and kind of let you know where we're at right now. As you can see, we've got four breeds that we already had purebred cow populations from on center to start with. Basically, we are continuing to increase some of their numbers right now. We've got several breeds that are just starting to get to their seventh, eighth blood, which as I said before, is kind of what we're considering purebred for the sake of the project, although we'll continue to bring in AI sires from the industry that'll make them higher than 7/8. This is where we're at with back crosses for each of the breeds right now. Obviously, we've been able to make a lot more back crosses for those breeds that were represented in cycle 7, Limousine, Red Angus, and Gelvie, for instance. And we're a little bit further behind on breeds that just got sampled over the last 4 or 5 years. Okay. Gives you an idea of where we're at now, and hopefully we continue to give updates on this and let you know how we're progressing on moving toward those purebred female cows. We will have completed, the nice thing about this transition and how this compares to cycles is basically, even though we're evaluating 16 breeds instead of the traditional 6 or 7 breeds at one time in the cycles of GPE, we'll basically have completed a cycle in about 4 years and get the same amount of data on 16 breeds as we did on 7 or 8 breeds in about 2 years of a cycle on the old GPE program. We'll probably over time start to adjust the amount of purebreds we have in a indirect proportion to the amount of registrations those breeds have in the industry. Part of that's pretty logical. If we're sampling the same number of bulls every year from each breed, we pretty quickly get to very high percentages of very small breeds in terms of the number of bulls we sampled, and much less of a proportion in some of the bigger breeds, such as Angus and Hereford, Charolais, so forth. And so basically we're trying to make sure that we're doing a good job of sampling percentages of breeds and not just doing a good job of sampling the small breeds by themselves. Okay. We'll continue to grade up the higher percentages, and I hope we can keep you updated on that without quite as much of the detail on GPE in future years on the crossbreed EPDs. The nice thing is this whole project is going to give us a lot more flexibility in how we use the cattle. We'll be able to make more use of the descendants of these cattle as they're being mated in GPE, and we're continuously updating the evaluations of the breed, which is critical to programs like across breed EPDs to make sure we're getting a good sample of these changing breed differences over time. So we're already adjusting breed differences for point in time based on genetic trend and based on what our weighted average EPD of the bulls we've used is relative to the average EPD of the breeds on their genetic trend. I keep saying this over and over, and if there's nothing else you remember me for, remember breed differences are not a constant. We need to keep looking at that and keep reevaluating it. GPE supports the crossbreed EPD system. It's important to still get a representative sample from each breed. And we sample the sires we need the samples of sires that have had the most progeny for breeds over the last 3 or 4 years to make sure we're getting influential sires in our GPE program. And just to let the breed association folks that are in here know, we will be requesting a sample of which breeds have been the most influential the last few years in the next month. So sometime in July you should be receiving an email so that we can proceed with our next sampling process. For those of you that are producers from these breeds, if you haven't been contacted before to sell us semen for this program, I want you to know how important we think this is to making sure we're getting a good representation of the beef seed stock industry. And we appreciate your help if you've helped us before. If not, We'd appreciate your help in the future, and we're glad to answer any questions about those sorts of things as well. With that, I'll take any questions. I'm not hearing you very well, Susan. I'm sorry. That's absolutely our plan right now, to put steers and heifers through that both. Right now, and I'm not saying our system can't change, but right now our system is to do approximately half steers and approximately half heifers out of AI sire progeny over the year, and try to get up to around 450 or so steers and about 425 heifers per year, feeding the steers a concentrate and the heifers a heifer development ration. Yep. Good question. Others? Dan. Yep. I promise I didn't plant that question, but that's really something I want to do. It's been on my radar for a long time here, and you don't have a grad student that wants to do that, do you, Dan? it's something I really want to do. We'd get the direct, as you said already, we'd get the direct pretty well. I'm not sure we'd get the maternal very well just yet, but there's no reason for us not to be trying to get calving ease in here instead of just birth weight as a proxy. Yeah, definitely want to do it. I'm not guaranteeing it's next year.
Any other questions for Larry? If not, let's give him a hand and thank you.
Thank you.